Well, hello, White Sox fans, and welcome to another edition of Future Sox Hot Takes and Heaters. I am your special host for the week, as Nick is down in Arizona, luckily watching Cease strike out seven people versus the Reds tonight. I am joined by Danny Miller and by Future Sox's Steve Hasman, a.k.a. Sleepy Harold. How you guys doing tonight?
Doing well. Doing really well. It was a beautiful day here in the Chicagoland area, and I am almost finished with my job at the current workplace before it shuts down permanently. So, you know, some people might look at that as like a bad thing, but I am not going to look the gift horse of being off for a little while in the mouth, you know what I mean? But anywho, before we move on to Steve, really quickly, I just wanted to say congratulations to you on an excellent showing in the 108 tourney today. Although I feel like maybe you might be happy with that showing, because you were pretty convinced you were going to lose like 98-2% in that thing. So to get whatever it was, 23 or 24% of the vote, not awful going against the juggernaut that is Beefloaf.
Yeah, I was pretty, I was pretty happy with that. I mean, I was expecting to get thrashed, and I did, but it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. So, hey, I'll take it.
How's it going there, guys?
Pretty good. Well, yeah. So, you know, as I mentioned, Dylan Cease is rocking it down in Arizona at Goodyear. And he's got seven strikeouts in three innings, gave up a solo shot to Jonathan India. But earlier today, rumors have started flying that the Yankees have looked back into and made an offer, apparently, to the White Sox for Cease. There are other rumors that the Rangers have scouts in the seats and that they've also been checking in on Cease. And I'm sure that there's probably other teams in there as well. I think Ryan McGuffey said that at least a deal has been offered with a top 100 prospect in it. Obviously no idea who that is, but there's a bunch of rumors flying around now that Gerrit Cole is having issues with his arm and Rodon's not looking so great. So Cease is apparently looking like he might possibly be traded. And Pedro Grifol was asked whether or not Cease was still going to be the opening day starter. And he said, how do I know? I don't know what's going on up there. So I'll just drop that to you, Steve. How do you feel about Cease going? What are you expecting in a return?
I mean, like, the return, setting the bar at a top 100 prospect, like, as vague as that sounds, you know, because, I mean, again, it could be anywhere from 1 to 100, theoretically. Now, you know, I see people, some kind of unhappy with that because, like, you know, nobody knows. Everything's all speculation. So it's kind of, I'm trying not to get too hung up because, you know, it feels like we've been through this song and dance how many times through this offseason already? So it makes some sense given the pitching injuries that have occurred to some of these teams that are vying for, you know, contention and deep postseason runs. So, and Cease having a strong showing. Again, spring training, I don't think that, like, a bad or pretty solid spring training start that he had is going to change the opinion one way or another. But I think it, him showing out the way he did, kind of reinforces, like, oh yeah, he's still good, in case anybody forgot.
Danny?
Yeah. I can't disagree with that. My thing about this whole situation is I just hope that if, you know, when these talks are happening, and, you know, obviously we're not hearing about any deals, Cease did pitch tonight, so it wasn't like there was, you know, a pending trade going on in the background. So that tells me that, you know, they're probably not even really close at the moment, or maybe the Yankees did want to see what he did in tonight's you know, start. But the reality is, you know, the talks have always been, or at least the whispers around these talks have always been that Spencer Jones needs to be part of this trade, right? And I'm not sure that I disagree with that. You know, Dylan Cease, if he gets his stuff together. Now, a lot of folks will say, you know, essentially only had one really good season, right? And then the rest of the time he's been mostly average or, you know, maybe slightly above average at times. But, you know, I think that when you see outings like this from Cease, even though it is only spring training, it shows you the value that he has within the White Sox organization. And, you know, Steve makes the point of there have been a lot of injuries in spring training across the league. And where does that leave the White Sox if we do decide, you know, that our GM, Chris Getz, decides that he does want to send him to another team? Where does that leave the White Sox starting rotation? And are we really truly going to get the value that we need in return for him? And I, you know, I think that he's done well in standing his ground and trying to get a haul for him, you know. And I know a lot of folks will say, oh, we're overvaluing our guys again, like we always do. But I would like to see Dylan pitch in a White Sox uniform. If he's not, it's going to have to be a haul on my end. I just hope it stays that way.
Yeah, I can see that. One of the stances that I've seen on social media is that Chris Getz is hanging on to the fact that he needs to get Spencer Jones from the Yankees. And, you know, me and Steve were talking about this before the stream. In my opinion, you know, I know what I've seen scouts saying, but I can't help but when I see him and I see his swing and I see the numbers and I see an outfield version of Zach Collins. And eesh. If the, you know, if the White Sox, you know, if he is the centerpiece for the trade and he comes back and he's hitting 235 in right field, striking out 175, 180 times in a year, I mean, you know, he will steal some bases when he gets on base, but the strikeouts are high, the walks are not. I think that White Sox fans would probably lose their mind if they see that as the return back. Not to mention, the guy just played a little tiny bit in Double A. So he's not even really that close. You know, I know that people say that, you know, he's a 30-30 guy. Well, the guy's only hit 20 home runs in the minor leagues, you know, through a season and you know, in the end of his senior year of school after being, or his junior year after being drafted. So is this, you know, really a sure thing? I don't think so. And I would much rather go with a higher upside guy personally, even if he is just a little bit farther away. You have any thoughts on that, Sleepy?
No, I mean, I would agree. It's like the power potential is great with Spencer Jones, just because he is a very large human, like Aaron Judge-esque. I think, what, 6'7", I think is
I think what he checks in. But close enough.
Close enough, yeah. But yeah, I would agree. Like, I think given with where the White Sox are with, you know, the talent pool and everything, I wouldn't mind somebody that maybe not, you know, safer profile or anything, but like farther away isn't necessarily bad. Like, you don't just getting somebody who could theoretically be ready next season if everything goes according to plan, and like it's not really like necessary. Obviously you want some reinforcement years in to kind of help build the team up and support them, but like you could also get that. I know, like, for with the Yankees at least, like Roderick Arias has been the more popular bandied about name on the old interwebs. And that's a guy who, yeah, is a bit further away, but there's a lot of at least opinions. If, you know, if the top 100 thing is your jam, like that he could shoot up and be top 30, if not higher, you know, so is that something maybe if, you know, if the cease to Yankees route is the way that it goes, like if Spencer Jones is off the table on their end, you know, Roderick Arias, a shortstop, you know, I'm all about the up the middle talent here too. I think that works. And those young guys too, that man, when they're good, like it doesn't matter how young they are. You see, they force the issue and get there quicker than you think, you know? So I wouldn't mind that way. I would kind of lean that way if it was up to me, but it, you know, it's not. So Danny, any view for you? What are you thinking?
No, I just like the way you're thinking. Obviously it sounds a little bit like the Rick Hahn thing of keeping that continual pipeline of players going on. And, you know, the idea of that was a sound one. Unfortunately, it didn't seem like the White Sox ever got that thing really rolling. But again, you know, I'm going to go back to beating a dead horse here, talking about, you know, Mike Shirley as much as we do on this show and his drafts so far. And, you know, now the White Sox, at least this offseason, have got themselves some depth. So I wouldn't mind seeing something like that. You're talking about in Arias. You know, you're right. This team isn't going to be uber competitive this season. So I'm totally fine with having someone that's got some time to work their way up, get some little bit, you know, more instruction down at the lower levels, and then, you know, be the next wave of MLB talent that makes their way along.
Yeah, I mean, personally, when it comes to a deal, when you are, you know, dealing from a extreme position, which is what you are when you're dealing a Dylan Cease, you know, this is top of the heap pitching guy, you know, top 50 pitcher in Major League Baseball, possibly, you know, depending on the year so far. You have to get, in my opinion, you have to worry about the best possible return that you can get, in my opinion. And I think that, you know, going for somebody that's a little bit closer, or prioritizing somebody close, isn't necessarily as much of a priority for me as it is, as it seems for some fans, because some fans seem to want to worry about, you know, whether or not the guy's going to be ready for the beginning of the season next year. And that is like of paramount importance to them. And to me, it's just not, you know, I would rather get a player that is going to be real good than getting a guy that's good enough. And, you know, it's like the old saying goes with dating, you know, looking for Mr. you know, right, not Mr. right now, you know, that's like kind of how I feel about this whole thing. So, in the, you know, continuing on with the pitching for the White Sox, Jimmy Lambert went or is going, I don't know if he got it yet or not, but he's going for a second opinion on his shoulder. And generally, it's not a good thing when somebody has to go and get a second opinion on something. It either means that somebody told him that something real bad's going on, and he is going to somebody else to hopefully get the opinion that it's not as bad as you think. And then also earlier today, Prelander Baroa also announced as having shoulder issues as well. So I think that that's going to put the entire idea of what is going to be in this bullpen into flux going into this season. Do you have any strong opinions, Steve, on what kind of an impact those guys getting shelved is going to have?
I mean, it would free up a spot or two. I mean, if they're going to be out an extended period of time, you figure they get thrown onto the 60 and, you know, free up a couple 40-man spaces for some of these non-roster invitee minor league deals that they signed. I mean, they signed how many did they, you know, reliever arms did they bring in?
So many.
You know, so if anything, it's got like those two guys being out is more impactful, you know, for the non-roster guys. You know, Pedro loved Brian Shaw. He pitched seemingly every day to end last season. So, I mean, I know he's been kind of not great during the spring, but, you know, like, he's a veteran with a track record and whatever. And Pedro liked him, so maybe they just throw him back on. But Dominic Leon, they have cousin, you know, like, just name after name of guys that they brought in, I guess, break glass in case of emergency. Well, you know, might need to start breaking some glass soon.
Yeah. Danny, got any thoughts here?
Actually, I kind of wanted to revert to you a little bit on this one, being the resident minor league expert. And the only reason, so I'm not trying to take anything away from our cohort, Steve, here, but, you know, as it's been said by many, you probably do more due diligence in watching guys pitch and watching the minor league players than maybe anybody on White Sox Twitter. And I've even made the joke of, you know, possibly some of our scouts. But
unfortunate.
I just kind of wanted to think, see what your thoughts were on maybe who might be, you know, the next couple guys up in this situation. Do you have a couple of guys that you were looking at thinking that, you know, they might be able to fill in and be at least decent?
So it kind of my thought on this whole thing in general has kind of been that I don't think that they're looking to have really any of the minor league guys in the bullpen to start the year. I know that, Elijah Evans is campaigning for Leisure, and, you know, some of the other guys have made some good showings. But with the amount of NRIs that they signed, and most of those guys that they signed are guys that came off of career worst years. And I think that if, you know, somehow Brian Bannister can work some magic to keep some of those guys around, that they're going to figure out a way to move around the 40-man roster to make it work. And I think that unfortunately, it's looking like the 60-day IL is going to be a perfect maneuvering piece for that kind of inaction with the roster. And I don't know. I mean, I would love to see Jordan Leisure out there to start, you know, right out of the gate, but I kind of don't see that happening. And I think that most of the other guys that are minor league guys that would have to be brought up, I think that the White Sox probably have, you know, in their mind a thought that they're probably going to at least start the year in AAA or wherever they get assigned to. You have any feelings on that, Steve?
No, I mean, I agree with the way you're thinking. That seems to be the path they've taken with, like you said, bringing in all these non-roster invitees and kind of making, instead of how with the previous regime, it was just kind of hand over space to young guy because it's needed. It seems like the approach, at least, you know, from to start, is make young players earn the call up. At least, I mean, with the bullpen, like, you know, how much do you need to see Leisure and Charlotte, you know, for instance, to, you know, April, maybe, if he's striking dudes out, you know, doing what he does, and non-roster invitee, XX, whoever it is, you know, stinks. Well, okay, get him out. And, you know, because who knows how many, you know, bullets are in the arm. So I think it's kind of make them earn the spot rather than just hand it to them, let them fail, and then, oh, we had no backup plan, which is, you know, the White Sox way of the past, hopefully.
I have one question on all of that, though. And I actually love where both of your heads are at on that. I can't argue with any of it. My only thought is, you know, when we talk about all these NRIs that are there, and I pretty much had the same thought. I just kind of wanted to, you know, pick your brain a little bit. But when we talk about these NRIs, and, you know, you mentioned that most of these guys are coming off of career worsts last year. Do you think the idea is hopefully we fix them and flip them for something a little bit more at the deadline? Do you think that, you know, maybe some of these guys show out and instead of trading away, you know, core talent that, you know, a lot of Sox fans seem to think is going to happen at the deadline, you know, if Eloy comes out with a banging year and, you know.
Can I just stop you for 1 second? Luis Robert just hit his second home run of the night.
Yay.
Continue.
Yeah, well, nice to see him heating up a little bit after some early struggles. But no, I, you know, the thought that when you mention these NRIs to me is that maybe they think they can get some value out of these guys at the deadline to continue building towards a more complete team next year and after. And I just kind of want to, you know, see if that was maybe a thought you were having as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see why not. You know, if you can take something off of the scrap heap and turn it into something that somebody else wants and you can get something useful out of that, that's living the dream, especially, you know, in living in reliever world. You know, it certainly is a much more desirable way for this team to operate than spending 35 to 40% of your payroll on relievers. And I think we can all agree on that.
Well, I mean, it's not like they didn't spend, you know, like $30 million on the bullpen again. It just happens to be on 30 different guys instead of like six.
Ah, that is the White Sox way, isn't it?
Yes, that's very on brand. Oh, Moustakas, homer.
Oh, look at that. Yeah, he's got two hits tonight. He's got a clutch hat trick halfway to the cycle.
Clutch hat trick mentioned in the chat there that he need to free up some room for Brad Keller and Mike Moustakas. Although I don't know, Moustakas might not need any room freed up for him. He might be getting grandfathered in already, the way some folks are talking.
You know, the bad thing though is that he has not had a good spring so far. You know, I mean, he did hit a home run right there, and he's got a couple of hits tonight, but he's had a rough go of it. But that said, you know, like everybody loves to say, it is spring training, you know, and sometimes you have to remember it's spring training for the players too. So,
Major likes to say things like, you know, the bench jobs are not going to necessarily go to the guy with the best stats in spring. You know, it's going to be the guy who gives us the most ways to play winning baseball.
And, you know, Pedro quotes. I mean, that is like Pedro's spring training quotes are just about the worst. You know, when we talk about that Boylan Pedro parallel, it doesn't get any better than spring training.
Trey Williams, any notable Pedro quotes stick out to us guys this week? You know,
well,
I mean, I think we brought up one already just from this afternoon, you know, being that, when the Yankees came out after the whole Gerrit Cole going for the MRI thing, that you know, Pedro being asked about if he knew what was going to happen with Cease, and he pretty much, you know, shrugged his shoulders. I don't know if he's going to be here or not.
This pretty much leads into our next topic of conversation here with this next quote. In almost TLR. Leury Garcia type quotes with have you seen his at bats?
I just put a heater out. I'm not doing it again.
You know, it's almost time for another one. He was just absolutely glowing the other day about Yoan Moncada laying down a bunt and said, when was the last time you saw that?
And he beat it out.
He did. Great bunt, sure, but you know, one of your best hitters on your team, do you want to have him bunting? So I guess we'll just start with that and then we'll work into the other point here. I know that this is one of your favorite things in the world, Steve, so why don't you tell me about your love for star players on your team bunting?
It's dumb. Like, I saw a tweet from, I think maybe it was Pitching Ninja, and it showed Freddie Freeman had 17 bunt attempts in his career for some reason, and he only got one down. And it was like, you know, whatever. He was bunting for a hit, and they had him shifted over and whatever. Like, okay, he's 1 for 17. Why are you bunting with Freddie Freeman 17 times? Unless he's doing it on his own that many. But that's still, like, swing the bat. And that's kind of the same sentiment I have with Moncada. Like, he's one of the better hitters on a baseball team that doesn't have very many. So why, what is the purpose of giving up an out for him? Like, give, just, he's done. Or, you know, I get the bunting for an hit angle. It's still dumb. It's just, I don't understand why we're trying to revert back to, you know, old timey grinder baseball, you know, get the uniform all dirty. Like, that's all good and whatever, but come on. Like, that's not how the game is played anymore. You look at smart managers and they say, we're not bunting because it's dumb, you know, and maybe not as bluntly as that, but it's just, I just don't see, like, I guess we're living in Pedro ball, you know, it's Pedro's world and we're just living in it. And you know, hopefully it's just a short trip.
Danny?
Well, do you think Pedro sees all the pining for Ozzie Guillen on White Sox Twitter? And he thinks if he just kind of adapts, you know, Ozzie's words of small ball and makes them his own, that maybe he'll garner some respect from the White Sox fan base that thinks he has no business being here. Because, I mean, honestly, Nick and I touched on this. Actually, we talked about it quite a bit last week, you know, and it was Ozzie's whole thing of get him on, get him over, get him in, you know. But the thing is you had guys like Scott Pocednik and Tadahito Oguchi and you know, you had guys that you could get on and get over and steal a base, and you could throw a bunt down, you know what I mean, and make some things happen. But, you know, the reality is you're talking about putting Yoan Moncada in possibly the two spot because he was begging for it, even though Pedro told him he's got to earn that. You know, we all know that that's pretty much the best place that Yoan's had in his career anyway, when he had, you know, actually good numbers, was out of the two hole. But I just can't see taking the bat out of his hands. If he's still going to have this bounce back year, especially if it's, you know, a contract season and he wants to get paid, why are we having this guy lay down bunts? Why are we giving, it's essentially giving away outs. For a White Sox team, it's really not expected to score a ton of runs. So why are we giving away outs?
Yeah, that's supposed to be the thing that you're supposed to be fighting for, is keeping those outs and giving away as few as possible in a game. Yeah, the whole thing drives me up a wall. And, you know, I titled the podcast / stream, "The Only Good Bunting is the Kind That's Hanging on the Walls in the Playoffs." And that's pretty much my opinion on the whole thing. But, you know, as this show is called Hot Takes and Heaters, I figured I was going to at least try and be the contrarian here with a hot take. With the roster that the White Sox are constructing, which is a bunch of guys who you do not expect to hit home runs and play the ball the right way, although most of them, you look at their numbers over the last several years, they haven't necessarily been putting up the numbers that you would be looking for in free agency. If that is the case of the kind of guys that you are going to have on the roster, can bunting work to make this team respectable? If you don't expect a Brett Phillips to be able to get a hit, but he can lay down a bunt, and he's coming up in a situation, rather than have him strike out or pop up to the first baseman, does bunting seem like a better option if you don't think they can hit the baseball? Well, I guess.
Let me ask you this. How many times can you bunt before the rest of the league goes, hey, this team likes to bunt?
We're about to find out. You know,
I mean, really, honestly, if that's your game plan going in, how often can you do that before everybody and their brother picks up on it?
Yeah, like I think even to kind of just go on Danny's point there, like it makes sense to theoretically have this, you know, campaign of bunting with the Nicky Lopez, whoever else is just going to be filling in these random, you know, holes, the guys that can't hit, essentially. But you can do it. You can only do it so much before they just realize that's all you're going to do. You have no other tricks up the back. So, I mean, I think the bunting angle like would make a lot of sense if Nicky Lopez was in the two hole, the get him on, get him over, get him in, because odds are he's, you know, swinging a wet noodle up there anyway. So, you know, like that part I would understand more rather than, you know, the projected, what, 6 through 9 of this lineup is kind of yuck. So if none of those guys can hit, and all they can offer is maybe bunting a guy over who gets on, like, you know, I think teams are smart.
Martin Maldonado home run.
Oh,
apparently
I take all that back.
The Reds are just giving them out tonight, I guess. Yeah, and you say that about Nicky Lopez
good tonight,
but Nicky Lopez sitting 409 with a 1201 OPS. Now, you know, spring training yet again, mm-hmm. and you know, he could win the Cactus League MVP, but you know, he's looked like a pretty consistent at bat out there so far this year. So I mean,
I just hope he doesn't end up with Albertoitis. You know, Hanser Alberto did the same thing last spring.
That's true.
Just saying.
Maybe coming home channels, what was it, 2019? Like All-Star Nicky Lopez, what year was that? Was that 2019?
I thought it was 2021.
Somewhat recently, but
yeah,
where he was actually like a 300 hitter.
Yeah. No, I would love to see that. And if, you know, he did indeed actually pick up some things in Atlanta that are really going to improve his game. I mean, I know that working with Ron Washington, who was there as the infield, you know, as the bench coach last year, before he got hired by the Angels, that probably paid some nice dividends as well in, you know, his daily work ethic, you know.
I mean, you don't think you give Marcus Thames any credit on maybe, you know, fixing his swing or his pitch selection? Or, I mean, I know that the knock on Marcus Thames is like, you know, a lot of people say, oh, well, what did he do in his career? You know, swing hard and hope for the best, you know. But some people say, you know, those that can't coach.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. That was exactly what I was going to say, is that, you know, those who do and those who can't teach, you know, same thing, you know. I don't know if that's necessarily true. I mean, he was, you know, he played in the major leagues. It's not like we're talking about a complete, slump here, you know, the guy that can't, you know, couldn't play baseball. This is a, you know, fairly capable athlete. I just don't know, you know. You know, people, you know, hitting coaches lose their jobs for a reason. And, you know, that's why they're available. So, you know, somebody wasn't happy. So, I who knows? He could be, you know, the next coming, you know, the Charlie Lauer, Walt Raniak. And we're all going to be talking about Marcus Thames for the rest of our lives, about how great of a hitting coach he was. And he's going to be here for the next, 25 years. But, who knows? So I wanted to throw this out there, and this is something that we did not put on the run list. Is there anybody in particular that you guys are worried about after watching? Well, I guess after stat watching, are there any guys that you're really concerned about other than Andrew Vaughn, and why?
Steve, Danny, why don't you go ahead and take
it? You can jump.
I'll take it. I'll take it. I am obviously going to be worried about, well, pretty much any of these guys that they've gotten to fill some holes. Paul DeJong is showing off a little bit of power in spring. And we've always known that could be part of his game. Sometimes, he has some seasons where he does it. Other times it's not as prevalent, but I just hope, I looked back at some of his spring training numbers in years past, and he's done this in spring before. And then it seems like those years where he has some power numbers available in spring doesn't translate when they get into, the MLB season. And it's like, not that I'm expecting anything huge out of Paul DeJong, right? But you kind of hope that these guys that they've kind of pieced together to just fill some holes in a season that is pretty much a foregone conclusion. You're not really competing for the AL Central. I just hope that maybe we would catch a little bit of spark. Again, going back to what we've been talking about for months and months now is, just finding a little entertainment value in this team. All of those guys worry me. The other one that worries me a little bit is Benintendi. I need to see more
of him. Who is 4-for-4 today, I will add.
Oh, see, now I have not been stat watching tonight, but, your supposed leadoff hitter, the only guy that they seem to think can lead off for this team, I just want to see him make good, solid contact. And from what I've been hearing, that hasn't been necessarily the case throughout the entirety of spring. So, Steve?
Yeah, I think for me, those are great, great concerns to bring up. I probably have to lean with Kopech giving some pause. He's doing some general Kopech things, and I guess this kind of can bring us back to another Pedro quote of Michael not having a guaranteed rotation spot, which, okay, sure, he should have to earn it, I suppose. But if you're just gonna thrust him back into the bullpen for
Brad Keller,
Brad Keller, yeah, Chris, I guess, Flexen. Chris Flexen. I mean, Chris Flexen might just have one, because who knows? Like, that's the thing.
Cease is gone.
Yeah, somebody's got it. Somebody's going to have to jump in. But even like what the whole that Pedro quote reminded me of. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast with Rob Bradford, but back in January, he had Brian Bannister on and talking about the processes and this and that of like taking on this new role with the White Sox. And at the time when Kopech was with the Red Sox, Bannister was there. And he just kind of happened to mention, like within speaking on him, that at that time he thought he would be a very dominant closer and just kind of unprompted. So I'm just kind of curious. That got me thinking then, is that the view that he's holding now? Like, they're giving Kopech this last ditch effort to show you can cut it like this, or, you're going back to the pen and you got closer stuff. We just got to hone it in. Like that kind of, I've been kind of, working with this like throughout the spring, and again, what his recent start, he had a bad first inning, and was that a game we could watch? I don't know, I don't think so.
At least the first one was
the one we, yeah, the one that saw, I think the most recent we couldn't, but I just saw like, oh,
I think it was a webcast.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, gotta fire that up.
Somebody else. Yeah, like Kopech, well, it becomes available afterwards, like several hours afterwards. Okay. But like the weird thing about the webcast is like you go to try and find the game and it doesn't populate in the watch category. Like you actually have to go to the home site for that team to watch the webcast. which to me is like, let's go out of our way to make our product as inaccessible as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's been a topic of ours in a while.
Uh-oh. When Ken Rosenthal is posting an article about your pitcher that you pretty much, you know.
He may be good as gone.
Yeah, he might be on his way out of town.
Saying Texas was early Tuesday, he had heard, this is the opening line, not spoiling it for anybody, but he heard that Texas might be close to acquiring Cease. And
okay,
probably not good form to sit here and read an article all doing a live podcast, but you know.
I mean, we talked about this off stream before the show. You know, we were talking about, you know, like I had mentioned Justin Foscue, and you had mentioned Sebastian Wolcott, and you know, there are some guys that are certainly worth looking at in the Rangers farm system. I mean, they have some nice talent in the top half of their system that I would certainly not be angry about getting. No. So I'm here for it.
Absolutely.
So really quickly, can we just get back to the Michael Kopech thing?
Sure.
And I know I hear what you're saying, Steve, about, you know, do you want to, you know, take Pedro's quotes and say, okay, well, if he doesn't have an automatic rotation spot, and you know, a lot of us have talked about the fact that, you know, you probably don't want him in the bullpen either if he's starting these, you know, his starts are shaky for the first 20 or 25 pitches coming out. You know, is that indicative of what you want out of a bullpen spot in any situation, whether it's long relief or you know, setup man or closer? You know, that's not the type of bullpen you want to have, right? So my question is what do you guys think? So I've heard it thrown around there, and I went to look it up, and I can't remember what I found. But does he not have at least one option available? And if he does, why would you not use that? Do you think that's a bad move to take a guy who's been touted as almost a shoe-in for your rotation and has been in your rotation for the last couple of seasons? Do you think it's a bad idea to option him with that left?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, did you look up the option years, Steve?
This says he has three on FanGraphs. So
that's what I was gonna say.
It would make sense if you're trying to get him. Yeah, if you're trying to get him right, but I don't, you know. If he doesn't crack the opening day rotation, and you don't want to thrust him into a reliever role, send him to Charlotte with specific things to work on, or Birmingham even, you know, I don't, like, because pitching in Charlotte is tough.
But I don't even know. I mean, send him to Charlotte.
He gives up
fly balls. He's not a ground ball pitcher, so sending him to Charlotte's probably the worst thing that you could probably do. But I mean, he did spend plenty of time in Charlotte on his ascent to the majors in the first time. So I can't really say. Yeah.
You know?
So Trey asks, when do you just pull the plug on Kopech? And I don't. I mean, it depends. I think that it depends on what you mean by pulling the plug. Now, if you talk about just saying, you know, we're just going to get rid of him, I mean, I don't know. That's up to Chris Getz to determine, you know, where the value's at and whether it's worth what the return is that you're going to get for him, knowing that he's been struggling, thinking that somebody is thinking that they're going to be able to fix him. So they're willing to give you some pieces to receive him. I don't know. That's a fairly reasonable question.
Looking at recent history, I've actually had put the thought out on social media that, you know, I don't know if you're going to get much for him if you try to shop him. He may turn, if he doesn't get it together soon, he could make his way into a DFA candidate. You know, I don't really know. I don't want to see that. Obviously, we have had such high hopes for him for many years now. You know, I hate to see it, but if he doesn't get it together and he's a dinger machine like he has been, you know, last season was just absolutely atrocious. Like you say, he gives up a lot of fly balls and a lot of them leave the yard. You know, who do you think you're going to get for him? You might not get nothing. You might just cut ties.
You might be able to trade him to San Francisco or Seattle, you know, where they've got a nice deep outfield. That might be a place for him to thrive with that fly ball. But, yeah, that's a great question. I mean, you know, we all were, you know. Well, then.
The ghosts?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we were all in awe when he went to make his first start. And we all saw that promise that he had. And at some point, it just kind of fell off the rails, you know, whether it had been COVID or, you know, just the lockdown in his mental space and whatever it is, things just seem to have like kind of gotten off the rails. And I mean, if they don't think that that's something that can be fixed, you know, maybe it's time to maybe cut the losses.
Well, I mean, you actually bring up a good point. Do you think him taking off that season has anything to do with where he's at now? Opting out of 2020?
Because, well, he would have been coming back because he had Tommy John at the end of 2018, right? The end of that season after he got called up and missed 2019. So he would have been, like, working his way back, you know, theoretically. So, like, to say, like, and he just skipped out on the season because it was weird. But, yeah, I don't, like, it's hard to say, you know, like how much, because I'm certainly didn't help. I could only imagine. But like it would have been some weird, probably innings limit, slow build up type situation. I know they said they could have thrown him in the bullpen, but then he didn't. I don't know what I'm. It's yeah. I mean, I think not pitching and it was what effectively like almost 2.5 years like off. You know, I'm sure that kind of makes me wonder. Yeah,
it just played a role in where he's at today. And, you know, the other part of that question, I guess, and the reason I ask it is maybe it's just going to take him that much longer to get back in the swing of things. And maybe we do see a good Michael Kopech. I don't really know.
Yeah.
Doesn't look like that so far this spring.
Yeah. Well, because we did see him function as like a good reliever, you know, so like it is there. Just something went wrong. So it's like, do they think they can at least get him back to that? And then at worst, which isn't like, you know, it's better than nothing, but it's, you know, given to where he was to like, to maybe set up guy, like ideally he could be like a shutdown closer and then like, okay, that's at least a positive outcome in my eyes, but like, you know, that, yeah, it's just tough.
You gotta throw strikes. That's the main thing.
Yeah, if you can't throw strikes, you know.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing, you know, is that a lot of people talk about putting him back in the bullpen. You don't know if the Michael Kopech of 2022 that was pitching in the bullpen and looked good, you don't know if that's the guy that you're going to get in 2024. You know, I mean, you're looking on the other side of, like, two knee injuries. And last year was really rough for him. And watching him in spring training so far, you know, the command's been rough. So I don't know what you're going to get. And assuming that putting him in the bullpen is going to be the magic pill that fixes him seems like a strange, you know, journey from A to B, from looking at what he has been doing to assume that he's going to get back to what he was and just all of a sudden be some sort of shutdown reliever, like, you know, in the corn game, you know? So I got a question. So what do you guys make of the enemy of the state, Brad Keller, being signed by the White Sox to the NRI deal? And now it's also coming up in the Ken Rosenthal article that the White Sox are looking at adding Michael Lorenzen to the White Sox staff. Did you guys find it odd that Lorenzen's still looking for work, being kind of like in that middle tier where he shouldn't be expecting, you know, $20 million a year, that he's still out there considering how he pitched last year is pretty productive.
Yeah, I think that is kind of strange, actually. There's a couple of pitchers still out there, you know, one or two that I won't name that are Boris clients and have been talked about.
There's also Clevinger
out there as well. Clevinger is out there who had a halfway decent season for the White Sox last year. Was he anything special? No, but he ate some innings and he was fairly productive. I'll give, you know, he was serviceable. You knew what you were going to get out of him. Same thing with Lorenzen. You know, he was serviceable. He had a decent season. And like you say, he's not going to cost you an arm and a leg to get him. And it is kind of shocking that he is not in a uniform right now. And yeah. I honestly, you know, if Cease is going to go by the wayside for the White Sox, he's going to go play for somebody else. First off, I need to know what they're going to get in return before I even, you know, speak on anything so much, you know, that we're obviously, we just don't know, right? But, you know, there's going to have to be some holes to be filled. And we've said it over and over and over again here. And I think pretty much every podcast and blogger and expert and, you know, guys in the BBWA are all saying the same thing, you know, that pitching depth, you can never have too much of it in this game, especially in today's, you know, game, because guys just happen to go down quite a bit. You know, they're throwing with more RPMs and rotations. You know, they're trying to get more movement. Guys are throwing 99, 100 miles an hour more regularly. Yeah, I mean, why not? If they don't crack the rotation, at least in the, you know, early on, which, I, you know, some of these guys that have been sitting for a while, I find it hard to believe they would anyway. But, you know, it might be something that, you know, you could see towards the middle or end of April. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what, Lorenzen had a no-hitter last year? He so, did. I mean,
it was an all-star, too, I believe.
Yeah. And it's,
for what it's worth, you know.
Yeah, and Clutch, you know, makes the point here that he did tail off towards the end of the year. But it is, it's a solid pickup, and it would be somebody that would be, you know, at least somewhat reliable. And I was listening, you know, I was kind of missing that familiar voice, and so I was listening to the Detroit Tigers game the other day, and
Jason
Benetti did mention that last year the average starters per team was 12.5, so we're going to need some starting pitching, especially if some of it is bad.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, that's just the, unfortunately, the reality of it is that, you know, if they trade Cease, the White Sox are going to need a lot of starting pitching, because it might just get to a point with some of these guys where you're just like, we don't want him to start anymore. We need somebody else to start, so let's get this guy out of here. So, yeah, I mean, it could be that they have 20. Even if
his arm is falling off.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? You guys got anything else for the week here? Anything to get off your chest that is just grinding your gears?
Steve? I'll touch on the Brad Keller thing real quick. It's a minor league deal. He's going to probably be in Charlotte. I don't care. Like, he threw it to him, like, what, 5-6 years ago? Like, okay, come on. It's time to get over it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think anybody in White Sox world is really all that angry about it. I think everybody is just kind of over it and just looks at it as silly because, oh, well, here comes another Royal.
Well, yeah, that's the bigger thing. It's of course, another Royal. You know,
silly is a perfect word for what we've been witnessing this offseason and the amount of Royal ties that are now in the White Sox organization, whether it be in the dugout, on the field, or in, you know, player development departments. There's a good quote. Ian Eskridge versus Beefloaf grinds my gears. And I want to address this one, if you don't mind, Ian.
Hey.
Is Ian's unofficial campaign manager today because he never asked me to do it. he didn't ask me to do it. I took it upon myself because let me just say, I love my brother next to me on the screen there. If it wasn't for Ian, I wouldn't be sitting here doing this on a weekly basis. He brought me into this, the podcast / stream world, brought me along with the Dugout and White Sox Daily, and now here at Future Sox. So I owe you a debt of gratitude. And I just want to say that, you know, of course we all love Beef Love here. He's just a great dude. Puts out a lot of good content that people love. But what grinds my gears about that matchup is he used Ian's White Sox Daily account, which, yes, has a ton of followers, but it's because we built that followership through, I should say you really built that followership through the amount of video that nobody else was providing on our minor league prospects, all those highlights and stuff. And it was not Ian's, it's not Ian's personal account, as you will. Ian just adopted it as, you know, he just put his own name on it recently. But I see what Beef was trying to do. You know, he said that, you know, maybe he did that to get Ian's new account a little more, you know, I don't know if it's an excuse or not. Maybe a little bit more exposure and get that content out there. But, you know, I think he gave himself a free ride through the first
round. Yeah, that was a cakewalk for sure. Yeah, he gave himself a little cupcake first round match to get that, last dance matchup against his brother. And, whatever. It's his tournament. He can do what he wants.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And it's all
for fun. I'm not mad about it.
It's all for fun, right? And, yep. You know, I might have been a little harsh in some of my comments and posts.
He's a big boy. He can handle
it. Full disclosure, we were DMing. The three of us, Ian, Beef, and myself, were all DMing each other throughout the day and kind of just having chuckles with each other. It's all in good fun. Nothing but love. Ian did put up a decent showing, like I said earlier in the show. You know, you might look at it on paper and say it was a shellacking, but...
It was.
It was. But, you know, for what it's worth, you know, I think you got more than you expected out of it, and I'll take that as a W. So, yeah, the matchup sucked. It is what it is, but Future Sox, Ian, all got some more exposure, so it's all good for us on our end.
Yep, that is exactly what I said, Trey. As soon as he pulled up the first bracket, and I just happened to be looking in the bottom corner of it when I brought it up, and I saw my name, and I was like, oh, what am I doing there? And I was like, oh, I'm going against Beef Loaf. Killer. So brutal.
Who are we voting now? If you're asking, unfortunately, Trey, Ian was the only member of Future Sox in the tournament this year.
Yeah, pretty crazy. I was expecting at least this, you know, I was expecting Sleepy to be in there, to be honest, you know, and I was thinking maybe that you might make it in there as well.
No, you know, here's the thing, and I knew probably, well, in my mind, I thought there was no chance I'd make it because, you know, I had taken, outside of retweeting our video and our podcast stuff, I don't do a ton on I don't do a ton on social media. So I wasn't expecting a lot. I have been trying to get a little bit more out there in social media because I just want to help myself and the brand here. And, you know, I'm getting back into things. But I'm glad that I wasn't because I don't think anybody really knows who I am.
Honestly. You're working on it. I'm in the same boat.
Now, so
that's why it was so laughable. But you know, hey, it was fun anyway.
So, yeah, exactly. Put me in the NIT.
Yeah, I think Pat Hester and Nick Morawski said that they were going to make the NIT version of this tourney. So maybe you'll get a seat in there.
There we go. All right, cool.
All right, you guys good?
Yeah, I think so. Oh,
yeah, right. Absolutely.
So, Future Sox Net.
Who we're voting for? I started to answer that question, and you know, in true Danny form, went off on a tangent.
Oh, who are we supporting now?
Yeah. So, this is going to be an unpopular opinion, but I'm one of those folks who, you know, if I'm watching, let's say, playoffs in football, baseball, hockey, whatever it is, might be. And my favorite team gets knocked out. I generally root for the team that knocked them out because I feel like if that's the team that beat us and they win the whole thing, well, then we were just beat by the better team. If they get knocked out by somebody else, I think, wow, man, what could have happened? If, let's say the White Sox go into the playoffs, and what would have happened if we would have beat the Oakland Athletics? Could we have gone on a run? You know what I mean? But if, say, they went all the way, I'd say, okay, we got beat by the better team. So, you know, as much crap as I gave Beef today, I think I'll pull for him. But it's really going to come down to the content.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. And you know, like, you never know what kind of content's going to get put out there. You know, like, I worked on doing something that was, just different than the norm. You know, it's like all the stuff that you see is like, people drinking and stuff. I didn't do that. I chose to do something else instead. And I had fun doing it.
Chose to do
whatever.
Something completely different. I smeared him a little bit. It's all good. And I know you didn't ask for that.
You know, it's all the good-natured fun. That's usually – you got to go for the people that, you know, that can kind of take it a bit. They can dish it just as good as they take it. I normally try to go for some, like, lower-seeded people whenever I would vote, outside of, like, any, you know, friends that I have or acquaintances I had made through the years of participating. Usually it's, you know, who can get riled up and rile up the masses, make it entertaining for the 2 weeks or however long the thing runs. I always forget, you know, I'm always like the 9 seed that gets knocked out, maybe
the
get like one
or something.
Yeah. Something like that. But it's always like you make it through. I'm like the outside the Power Five conference type. And it's like, oh, you're just kind of grandfathered in. You're going to get shellacked by who's ever in that next round.
Right.
So
can I put a shameless plug out there for my boy?
Oh,
for
yeah.
Tomorrow's.
Sure.
Tomorrow's.
Sure,
all right. So if you're here live with us right now. I just want to go ahead and say, and I'm not going to tell anybody how to vote. You vote how you want to. But anyone who's familiar with Dis 110, also known as Yeah Dog, happens to be a childhood buddy of mine. So, I'm just going to go ahead and throw my support backing him, at least through this first round tomorrow. Again, it's all going to come down to content, but he's kind of a clown. He's going to make some good content and put it out there for you. So give him a look. If you want to vote for him, please do.
Hey, there you go. All right, so I'm going to call it for the night. Futuresox.net, you can find all of the written content, including our top 30 that was just recently released. Elijah Evans has put out quite a few articles here from some of the interviews that he's been doing while he's down there, so feel free to check that out. On the site, you can also find a Patreon link where you could support us, which we would appreciate. My name is Ian Eskridge at Daily White Sox, Danny Miller at Danny Miller FS, Steve Hassman, a.k.a. at Sleepy_Harold_. You can find our Future Sox account at Future Sox. If you are listening to this in podcast form, you can also watch it live on the YouTube and the Twitch. You can also listen to this in audio only on YouTube. We have two other streams, the Future Sox podcast with me and James Fox, and then on Mondays you have Elijah and Jeff, which they are not currently streaming live. We upload it afterwards. At the moment, but it does come out in podcast. We appreciate your time. Thank you so much for coming in and hanging out, and we will catch up with you guys next.